This past month, National Public Radio has been airing a series titled Iran at the Crossroads. This last story tells us about an unusual literature professor, a woman named Azar Nafisi, who uses what she calls the subtle subversion of writers Jane Austen, Vladimir Nabokov, Henry James, and others to challenge conventional thinking in Iran. Dr. Nafisi holds one of the few PhDs in English literature in Iran. Jackie Lydon visited the professor in Tehran and has this portrait.
Bye, sweetheart.
Bye.
He's going to his English class.
Azar Nafisi is getting ready to go to work. Since teaching at a university is technically a government job, she has to comply with the strictest Islamic dress code. It's a reverse procedure. She's going out, so she takes her makeup off.
Over here, if I give a lecture about revolution, I won't be in trouble. But if I wear lipstick, I'll be in trouble. You know, so as a woman, you know, I have to rethink and redefine myself with the values which are right now in power.
Western literature was encouraged in the Shah's time. Now it hardly seems relevant. The number of women teaching has also plummeted. Today, out of 1,700 professors at major universities in Tehran, only about 200 are women.
I mean, our lives are so irreal. They're not just unreal, they're irreal.
Do you mean unreal or surreal?
I mean irreal in a sense. I've tried to coin this word. Because when you talk about unreal or even surreal, you're presupposing a sort of a reality. But for me, reality is so much created in a void that every morning I get up, I invent my reality. You know, that fiction is much more real to me than reality.
Nafisi is an iconoclastic woman who puts a tassel on the black scarf she must wear to class, and she's an iconoclastic professor who uses seemingly anything to nurture the imagination in a country overwhelmed by doctrine and slogans. On this day, the striking professor twirls in front of her class of men and women graduate students. She holds a daffodil and a pot of fake red poppies against her black chador to make a point.
Is this a work of art? We are talking about points of view, from what point of view you see and view a flower.
Her graduate classes are taught in English. Nafisi's reading list, all considered great works of the West, is filled with complex characters who consider their circumstances. The lonely heroes of Vladimir Nabokov, or Henry James' bad girl heroine, Daisy Miller. The impertinent Elizabeth in Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. And in a not-so-thinly-veiled metaphor, there's Alice, a heroine who wanders where nothing is what it appears to be in Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland.
Thinking again, the Duchess asked with another dig of her sharp little chin. I have a right to think, said Alice sharply, for she was beginning to feel a little worried. Just about as much right, said the Duchess, as pigs have to fly.
When Alice comes back to the world of reality, she cannot look at reality. She cannot look at the grass. She cannot look at a white rabbit in the same way that she had looked at it before. So there would be a power in you, which you get from fiction, which you get from that other. And with that power, once you look at your reality, you discover that things do not have to be the same way that they are now.
There is no credible organized opposition in nor outside of Iran. There's no popular leader waiting in the wings of exile. What is most challenging, then, is the handful of thinkers, writers, and university professors who work within the system in Iran. Opposition doesn't just come from the government. It comes from fellow academics and even from Nafisi's own students, at least initially.
When they read Jane Austen at the beginning, we always begin with Pride and Prejudice. They thought, what? They kept complaining about what relation do these people have to us. I mean, why should we read about these people? But, and I'm not exaggerating, you could talk to them. By the end of the course, it becomes the most exciting topic because they discover that a subject like marriage, which in this society is counted as trivial, quote unquote, is really the basis of a lot of values and norms which we call revolutionary. And it's also the image of women. The fact that novel begins with concentrating on these women who rebel against the way their lives have been shaped for them or defined for them. That is very important for my students, for them to learn about these details. And it really corresponds to the whole question of whether you should or should not wear a lipstick, whether you should hold hands in public or not. You know, these are our problems, and these are real problems for us.
A part of the problem, she says, is there's no real dialogue between men and women on an equal footing, which is why she teaches Pride and Prejudice.
What does Mr. Darcy mean, said she to Charlotte, by listening to my conversation with Colonel Forster? That is a question which Mr. Darcy only can answer. But if he does it any more, I shall certainly let him know that I see what he's about. He has a very satirical eye, and if I do not begin by being impertinent myself, I shall soon grow afraid of him.
Azar Nafisi could perhaps get at some of the same concepts by drawing on the wealth of Persian literature, but she's always loved the idea of looking at her culture through other people's eyes. She has a PhD from an American university. She's taught at Oxford and could probably teach again in the West if it's what she truly wanted. But Iran mesmerizes her, even when she can't stand it, a typical paradox.
Iran for me was like this sort of paradise from which they had wrenched me away. And then, of course, as soon as I came back, I started dreaming about that other culture. And that is the plight of people like myself.
That have a foot in both worlds.
Yeah. You have to define your existence because you don't have a society, one society to define it for you. You know, I felt that while I was in the States, I was defining myself through the dream of Iran, through my language, my culture, and now that I'm in Iran, I've discovered that I can't forget James or Joyce or Nabokov or any of them. They're with me, part of me. And the way I communicate with my own society, ironically, is through these people.
While Western literature isn't sanctioned by the state, the ideas within it are potentially dangerous. Her students appreciate the atmosphere of freedom she creates in class, a freedom they don't feel elsewhere in the university system, one student explains.
Even there are some, we have some classmates that in front of whom we cannot speak everything.
What would they do?
Well, they may report to some, I don't know, to some Islamic societies in the university, and that wouldn't be good for us.
Mm-hmm. What would happen to you?
Well, they, let's say that the final thing is that we'll be out of university.
Yeah, you might get expelled. Yes.
Official sanctions are just there in the back of your mind. You can't forget it and they won't let you forget it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So the point about it is that it might be all illusory and nobody might do anything to you. But the fact that you have to constantly think about it, you know, that's the worst thing I think in life. Right. You know.
So most people find a way to cope.
A lot of people, what they do, they create this split life for themselves. Like they completely follow the rules. And then they come home and there's somebody else and then, you know. And I think that the worst thing that could happen to you is that, you know, that you somehow you have to find a way to make yourself legitimate,
yeah.
You know, and to impose yourself, I mean, impose your legitimacy upon your society.
The struggle to maintain one's integrity is what draws her to Nabokov. For example, in the Russian novelist's Invitation to a Beheading, the main character is sentenced to death for an imaginary crime. He spends his days testing his own reality in an absurdist, perhaps make-believe, jail.
I want to share with you some conclusions I've reached. I am surrounded by some sort of wretched specters, not by people. They torment me as can torment only senseless visions, bad dreams, dregs of delirium, the drivel of nightmares, and everything that passes down here for real life. In theory, one would wish to wake up, but wake up I cannot without outside help, and yet I fear this help terribly.
Many of Azar Nafisi's peers regard her as brave. She points out she's teaching a new way of thinking and maintains that the imagination is the most radical tool in any culture. Such an idea still gets people fired in Iran, and indeed she's had a rocky time at several universities. But she's managed to keep teaching and avoid serious trouble because what she teaches is the gray area in a black and white ideological climate.
You come from Jane Austen, you come to James, the same problem remains. You come to Nabokov, the same problem remains. That the real villains in the novel, the evil in the novel, is those who are insensitive, who cannot have the power to empathize and therefore put themselves elsewhere. So it would be very easy for us to call the Vietnamese gooks and then kill them. Huh? Because we are not looking at them in detail.
generalizing them and then beheading them.
It's not only the westernized, secularized student who appreciates the moral dilemmas found in these novels. Another student, a committed Muslim, said Nafisi's classes had opened his eyes to broader notions of morality. He wrote about it in his senior thesis.
To judge people as to bad and good is actually to slaughter them, to mutilate them into different parts. I'm just trying to say that what matters is that everybody should have the right to have a voice of his own, and others should respect that voice, no matter how different that voice is. And this is what I found in James, actually. A part of relationships found in James actually turns around this question of voices, that how you treat other people's voices actually shapes your identity.
Iran, Azar Nafisi says, is neither a self-reflective nor a self-critical society, and blame is always put elsewhere. In that sense, she finds it a reactionary culture. We have an obedient public face, says the literature professor, and a private life.
This sort of discrepancy between what you say and what you are, and the fact that you feel no shame, you know, the fact that you're not conscious of it. Mm-hmm. And people ask you to be like that. Not, again, not the government, but people like yourself, because this is the only way they feel they can survive.
So there's no shame, really, about being completely hypocritical.
There's no shame. I mean, my 11-year-old daughter already knows that there are certain things that she talks about in school and certain things that she talks about at home, you know. And this is what is so frightening, you know, because how can you have a self? How can you create? How can you imagine? How can you have an active culture if you're constantly hiding what you are? You lose yourself.
Losing yourself. That was the very thing Alice in Wonderland fought against, of course.
She stretched herself up on tiptoe and peeped over the edge of the mushroom, and her eyes immediately met those of a large blue caterpillar that was sitting on the top with its arms folded, quietly smoking a long hookah and taking not the smallest notice of her or of anything else.
Alice in Wonderland, one of Iranian professor Azar Nafisi's required texts. I'm Jackie Lydon, reporting.
Our profile of Professor Nafisi was produced by Alice Winkler, with readings by Roya Hakimzadeh.